WMAL News at 7. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. A man's dead after being shot on a Metro bus in Montgomery County around 7:45 last night. Metro Transit Police say it happened after two people got into a fight on a Z6 bus at Lockwood Drive and New Hampshire Avenue. Montgomery County Police spokesperson Shira Goff.
This was not something where this person was randomly shooting people.
The search continues this morning for the shooter. Police are also looking to talk to anyone who was on the bus when it happened. This comes after about a month after a fight on a Metro bus in D.C. spilled onto the street. Police say one man opened fire, shooting an adult and a six-year-old, and also an adult man and a nine-year-old. A number of recent shootings in Metro trains have led police to step up police presence at a few stations. Metro General Manager Randy Clark also told the board's transportation committee the agency has hired mental health crisis intervention specialists.
More of their interactions on a daily basis are becoming more connected to mental health than maybe traditional law enforcement activity.
The decision came after a man shot three people at the Potomac Yard Station, killing a Metro mechanic who stepped in to save a woman. Metro police have teamed up with Montgomery County Police to make sure they have enough officers for the patrols. A mistrial declared after a jury deadlocks in a case against a Pentagon police officer who was charged in connection with a fatal shooting at an apartment complex in Tacoma Park in 2021. Prosecutors say David Dixon shot five times at what he deemed to be a suspicious vehicle and killed two men. A spokesperson for the Montgomery County State's Attorney's Office said yesterday that the state will retry the case. New trial dates will be set next week. A month after a six-year-old Newport News boy shot his teacher in a classroom, Newport News police find another six-year-old at a different school with a gun. School employees at Little Creek Elementary found the gun on the child on Thursday and took it away. His mother was arrested and charged with contributing to the delinquency of a minor and allowing access to a loaded firearm by a child. In last month's shooting, a six-year-old shot his teacher with his mother's gun at Richneck Elementary. That mother hasn't been charged. An attorney for the family says the gun was secured. The school system superintendent was fired after news that school officials were warned the boy had a gun but didn't take action. Our winter warm may have taken a brief break, but it may not be enough to keep the cherry blossoms from bursting out all over.
I'm the Lorax. I speak for the trees.
Blossom whisperer Mike Litterist with the Park Service does keep an eye on these things. He tells WMAL's O'Connor and Company there's still plenty of winter left.
But if we don't get some cold weather, we're certainly looking at a late March bloom, if not before that.
The record early bloom is March 15th, and he thinks that could be broken this year. But what about the festival, which starts on the 20th?
There's going to be plenty of opportunity. If the Yoshinos come early, the Kwanzans come right after them. So there's going to be something in bloom while the festival's going on.
John Matthews on WMAL and WMAL.com.
WMAL Sports, the Kansas City Chiefs offensive coordinator, Eric Bieniemy, has signed a multi-year agreement to serve as the offensive coordinator for the Commanders and assistant head coach to Ron Rivera. Traffic and weather next. Here's Albie D in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
On the Virginia Beltway, inner loop and outer loop, I just looked at the traffic cameras. No crashes or construction slowing you down. On 66 in Fairfax County, you're at speed on the eastbound side and on the westbound side. On 95 in Virginia, you're not tapping the brakes between the Beltway and Fredericksburg, either northbound or southbound. And in D.C., on 295, 395, and 695, no crashes or construction. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Today, sunny, highs in the upper 40s. Right now, in Washington, 29 degrees. I'm Heather Curtis on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Now on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
The Saturday Morning Update.
The Saturday Morning Update continues. I'm Rick Fowler, and we join KT McFarland a little early this morning. She is at the Glasgow International Airport in Scotland. She is the former Deputy National Security Advisor to President Trump and the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. KT, good morning, or good afternoon, I should say.
Well, Good afternoon. And I just want to let you know how dedicated I am to WMAL and to Rick Fowler and all of your listeners. I am calling you from under a stairwell at Glasgow Airport on another typically rainy day in Scotland. So it's good to be with you.
And thank you for having them hold the flight. We appreciate that, too. Well, you know, the story on the Chinese balloon and whatever the other objects were continues to dog the president. The senators on Capitol Hill, the congressmen, not happy this week with the response they're getting. As we're now a couple of weeks into this, what are your thoughts on it?
Well, there's sort of two issues. One is the immediate issue of what the hell's flying over our skies. And I don't think we've had an adequate explanation. And I do think the President of the United States needs to go to the Oval Office, as other presidents have done during times like this. Go to the Oval Office, sit behind the desk, and say, this is to the American people. Here's what we know. Here's what we don't know. Here's what we're going to do about this immediate crisis. And here's my bigger plan. And really, that's the second part of the issue that he's got. So what's the plan to deal with China? There's no plan. I mean, they're going to have more meetings, or they're going to cancel a meeting, or have another meeting. But the Chinese have been at war with the United States in a Cold War, an economic war, for 20 years. And we're just waking up to it now. And they have a whole of government plan. It's not only to advance their technologies by buying or stealing our technologies and beating us at the manufacturing game and beating us at the trade game and treating us really like an inferior, declining country. But they've just built, in the last 5 years, they've built up a massive military. Probably the biggest military buildup in over 100 years anywhere in the world. What are the spy balloons? They're probably looking for a target list for their new intercontinental ballistic missiles. So what's our plan? And it does not seem that we have a comprehensive plan on the scale that we need it, one that has an aspect of technology, military, defense, communications, security. We need all those things. And maybe what we need is a new NATO alliance in Asia, where it's not just we're having meetings with the Japanese and the Koreans and the Philippines and the Australia and New Zealand and the United States, but we actually have a pact with them, a trade pact, as well as a security alliance pact. I'm not hearing anything remotely like that from this administration. And frankly, we've got 5 years to fix this. In 5 years, China is the superior country in the world, the dominant nation. They'll rewrite all the rules, and we will never, ever again retain our position and our peace and prosperity that we've enjoyed for the last 50, 100 years.
Well, the plan so far is to turn the radar up a little bit so we can see smaller objects,
great.
Right? I want to turn to an opinion piece. I want to turn to an opinion piece that appeared on the Fox News site on Valentine's Day. And this is from you. It is a Valentine's Day letter to my daughters for a long and happy marriage. And I know Valentine's Day was Tuesday, but I want to bring this up because I think this is advice and information that people can use 365 days a year, KT. So so what stands out to you for a long and happy marriage?
Personal. It was very personal. I was a little nervous about writing it. But it's something that I've wanted to write to my daughters and now my granddaughters. And, you know, I've been married almost 40 years. It's been a wonderful life. We have 5 children. We have 8 grandchildren. And I wanted to sort of tell my daughters, what can you expect and how do you get a life that's fulfilling in all directions? And so, number one, I've got 3 points. Number one, marry the right guy. Marry the guy who adores you and treats you well and the guy who's going to make you a better person. So it's not necessarily the richest or the most handsome or the wittiest or the most charming, but the one who is your enduring friend. And secondly, you're in it together. It's no longer your problems or his problems. And life, over the decades, it's going to throw you a lot of curves and a lot of issues, whether they're financial, your job, your children, your health. And if you approach it together, like we're in this together, how are we going to solve the fact that you have cancer? How are we going to deal with the fact that you've just lost your job? So if you deal with it together in a weird way, it brings you much closer because you can deal with those things together and then find a whole depth of closeness in your relationship. And then finally, it's family first, you know, especially in Washington where everyone's so consumed with their career and getting ahead and, you know, getting the next deputy assistant secretaryship or something or other. put your family first. You never get those times back, even if it means you sacrifice your career to a certain extent. So I think if you follow those three rules, you'll have a long and happy life and marriage. And you, as I did in this last Thanksgiving, can sit back. My husband and I are patriarch to a large clan of children and grandchildren who all actually really enjoy being in each other's company.
K.T. McFarland's opinion piece is at foxnews.com, and the headline on it, of course, is the Valentine's Day letter to my daughters for a long and happy marriage. K.T., have a wonderful trip, and thank you so much for joining us live from Glasgow this morning.
Thank you, Rick. Talk to you next week.
And you too. Thanks. We're at 7:15. This is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL, and we will be talking with John Gizzi next, but right now, Albie Dees in the WMAL Traffic Center.
In Montgomery County, on the Clara Barton Parkway, eastbound at the Beltway, reports of a crash. Heads up in Silver Spring, Georgia Avenue, both directions are shut down for a structure fire between Fenwick Lane and Spring Street. In the district, on Suitland Parkway, both directions are closed for a crash. This is at 1st Sterling Avenue. And on 295 and 395 and 695 in the district, no crashes or construction slowing you down. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Temperatures much colder to start your weekend. We are in the low 30s this morning, but we'll climb up to around 48 to 49 for that afternoon high, which is normal this time of year. Plenty of sunshine and light west winds at about 10 miles per hour. Tonight, down to the upper 30s, and tomorrow afternoon, middle to upper 50s. A little bit breezy as south winds return around 15 miles per hour. I'm 7 News meteorologist Jordan Evans in the First Alert Weather Center.
27 degrees in the nation's capital, 7:16, Saturday Morning Update. 7:18, the Saturday Morning Update continues. I'm Rick Fowler. We are joined by John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. John, good morning.
Good morning, and happy President's Day early.
Thank you. President Biden playing tough guy this week, and give us an assessment at week's end. You mean even Friday afternoon, John Kirby was being grilled on the balloon shootdown and the objects that were not quite sure what they were yet.
Well, the shootdown over South Carolina was of a quadrangle-shaped object, and there have been three shootdowns of unidentified flying objects, and one, of course, the alleged Chinese spy balloon. That was at a higher altitude than any of the others, 60 to 65,000 feet. All told, the president addressed this on Thursday afternoon. He said that he would stand up and shoot down balloons if he felt they were a threat to the United States. He also said he planned to talk to Chinese President Xi about this. And overall, he took a few minutes to speak, but said that this would not be tolerated in the future. Now, all this comes before the remains of the Chinese air balloon have been released to the public. They said weather was holding it up, but it is likely that at the beginning of next week, we'll know just what this was all about.
Well, obviously, we're going to see Republican criticism of whatever the administration does, but a lot of Democratic criticism, including Senator John Tester from Montana, but a number of other Democrats speaking out about the way this was handled. And on top of that, they had briefings, but the senators came out and weren't thrilled about the briefing information because there wasn't that much.
No, they were not thrilled, and National Security Council spokesman John Kirby did not do a lot to fill in the gaps. Look, what this has done has fueled more oversight and more investigations by the Republican-controlled House. There is a new China Commission chaired by Congressman Chris Smith, Republican of New Jersey, which is supposed to deal with Chinese hostile designs on the United States. This could well be expanded to include spying, like the balloon coming over. We're also going to see the House Foreign Affairs Committee under Chairman Mike McCaul take an aggressive role in doing what they feel the White House has failed to do, and that is to just explain what these balloons are all about. Now, we should hear a lot about this in the future, and if there's more balloons, we'll just see how tough the president is. Republicans and many Democrats in the House, most of whom have a good record of being opposed to the current regime in China, aren't taking this lightly.
President Biden had his annual physical, even though he didn't have one last year, but he did have it this week, and his doctors pronounce him, quote, healthy, vigorous 80-year-old. That's the declaration of his physician. But Ronnie Jackson, formerly President Obama and President Trump's White House physician, came out and said that he thought it was a, quote, cover-up.
The president had a physical exam on Thursday morning at Walter Reed Hospital, and there was no conclusion of it. Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre told us later that day that there would be a detailed written report on it. Now, this differs markedly from when Donald Trump was president and Ronnie Jackson was his physician. I recall how, after the president's checkup, Dr. Jackson appeared before reporters and took questions for more than an hour about just about every aspect of the president's health, including his weight, the fact that he had never smoked in his life and was a teetotaler. There have been questions about the president's walk, that he coughed too much during the last time doctors had a go at him. But all of this, we presume, will be in writing. As for follow-up questions, they're just not going to happen. And when we're talking about the oldest president in history and someone who seems bound and determined to seek re-election at 80, it's a cause for concern.
Nikki Haley making headlines this week, announcing a run for the presidency in 2024, and Don Lemon sure helped her along.
Yes, he certainly did. Don Lemon should be listed as an in-kind contributor to the fledgling Haley campaign when he suggested that the former governor of South Carolina and Donald Trump's U.N. ambassador was not in her prime, that one's prime is in the 30s or 40s, but not at age 51. I might add that Don Lemon is older than that. He eventually walked back the remarks, although the word sorry was not on his lips, and then he had a day off from work. Go figure that one. In the case of Nikki Haley, it should be noted that she called for a new generation of leadership, echoing the same theme as Arkansas Governor Sarah Sanders last week, that she offered a new agenda that included mental tests for people holding office over the age of 75. And it's a very different kind of campaign that she's bringing out. Now, again, she's from South Carolina. The Palmetto State's Senator Tim Scott could run for the presidency and is likely to announce he's doing that. And she faces competition from everyone from, in all likelihood, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis to former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo to Donald Trump himself, who's the only other announced candidate. But at the very least, her clash with Don Lemon makes Nikki Haley at least someone to watch.
Don Lemon's no longer in his prime, and he's no longer in prime time either.
Yeah.
John Fetterman, the newly incoming senator from Pennsylvania, now expected to be in the hospital at least for a few weeks for the treatment of clinical depression. What does this mean for the balance in the Senate and the voting?
Well, of course, that's one less Democratic vote and brings the Democrats down from 51 to 50 seats, meaning that on every vote they're going to have to count on Vice President Kamala Harris to cast a tie-breaking vote, if there are any. John Fetterman was elected after suffering a stroke on the day he won the primary. We know now that the degree of that stroke was underrated and underreported, and in the end, he won before a universally panned debate performance simply because so many people had voted absentee and early. Now we're seeing a situation where everybody has his or her eyes on the ailing senator, and we don't know exactly when he'll return to the Senate. Is there precedent for this? Absolutely. Senator Carl Mundt, Republican of South Dakota, had a massive stroke in 1969 and for nearly 3 years was in the hospital and not voting. Before that, Senator Claire Engel, Democrat of California, suffered a stroke in 1963. A year later, when the Senate voted on the Civil Rights Bill, he simply showed up and pointed to his eye to signify I. Now, no one knows whether it will go this far with Senator Fetterman. A lot of people have clinical depression and are treated for it, but we will have to just simply wait and see what happens next. I would say that it's hard to remember the last time one senator's health drew so much attention nationwide.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. As always, John, thank you so much.
Always a pleasure, and again, happy President's Day.
Thank you. And it is 7:28 on the Saturday morning update, and if you're joining us and saying, wait a minute, what's going on? We usually hear Cheryl now, and we didn't hear John when he was supposed to be on. If you kind of missed the first part of this hour, we picked up KT McFarland live from Glasgow. She was at the airport boarding a flight, so we switched up the order this morning. So coming up, you'll still hear Cheryl Atkinson and also Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer. So stay with us right here on the Saturday morning update. We're at 7:29 on the Saturday morning update, and every day there's a different angle on crime in this country. There's a different story. There's something new every day, as they say. Well, here's one I hadn't heard before. I've heard about catalytic converter thefts, but this one's a little different. Oscar Mayer's iconic Wienermobile couldn't cut the mustard over the weekend after the catalytic converter was stolen from the Oscar Mayer Wienermobile. It happened in Las Vegas. It was there for a series of Super Bowl-related events. By the way, it's 27 feet long. It's a 27-foot-long hot dog. But crew members were doubtful they could make it to a 10 o'clock appearance after they discovered the Wienermobile's catalytic converter had been stolen overnight. It had to be towed to a Penske truck rental lot where they came up with a temporary converter. It's 7:30. Heather Curtis has the news next on WMAL.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.
News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. The search is on for a man who shot and killed another man during a fight on a Metro bus in Montgomery County last night. It happened on a Z6 bus at Lockwood Drive and New Hampshire Avenue around 7:45. Montgomery County Police spokesperson Shira Goff says this was targeted.
The witnesses left, and so we're looking for them to come back to give us information.
This is the second shooting stemming from a fight on a Metro bus in the last 2 months. A 6- and 9-year-old were shot as they got off a bus in D.C. after a man on the bus also shot the man he was fighting with. A former Pentagon police officer charged with 2 counts of second-degree murder is being held without bond after a mistrial was declared in his case yesterday. David Dixon was charged after police say he shot 3 men, killing 2, at a Tacoma Park apartment complex in 2021. Prosecutors say he thought the men were breaking into cars. Police say the car was driving past Dixon when he opened fire. Dixon's attorney argued the car was driving toward his client. The Montgomery County State's attorney says he'll retry the case. It's been a warm winter, and that may mean one of Washington's favorite spring traditions will happen early. Mike Litterist with the National Park Service tells WMAL's O'Connor and Company the cherry blossoms may be gracing us with their presence earlier than usual this year.
There's a long way to go. We've got another month or so of winter, but if we don't get some cold weather, we're certainly looking at a late March bloom, if not before that.
The record early bloom is March 15th. WMAL Sports, the Commanders sign a multi-year agreement with former Kansas City Chiefs offensive coordinator Eric Bieniemy. He'll serve as Washington's offensive coordinator and assistant head coach to Ron Rivera. Traffic and weather next on WMAL. Traffic and weather on News Talk 105.9 WMAL. Here's Albie D in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In Virginia right now on the Beltway, I just looked at the cameras. Good news, no crashes or construction slowing you down. In Fairfax County on 66, lanes are clear in both directions, eastbound and westbound. Not to 95 in Virginia. Between the Beltway and Fredericksburg, you're not tapping the brakes, northbound or southbound. And in D.C. on 295, 395, and 695, you're clear. All lanes are open and at the posted speed limit. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Temperatures much colder to start your weekend. We are in the low 30s this morning, but we'll climb up to around 48 to 49 for that afternoon high, which is normal this time of year. Plenty of sunshine tonight, down to the upper 30s, and tomorrow afternoon, middle to upper 50s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Jordan Evans in the First Alert Weather Center.
Right now, 28 degrees in Washington. I'm Heather Curtis on WMAL.
The Saturday morning update continues. It is 7:36. I'm Rick Fowler. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer joins us. Host of the Thought to Action podcast, president of the London Center for Policy Research. Tony, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Rick. Always great to be here.
Well, after a lot of hounding by the media and the Congress, the president came out, made some comments about the balloon and the objects. Your assessment at week's end, Tony?
So, look, I watched his comment. I watched John Kirby's follow-on to clarify Biden's comments and basically compliment themselves on what a great achievement it was to clarify what was going on by saying absolutely nothing, I might add. And that's the issue. I've actually looked at independent sources, just trying to examine the facts and the facts that are based on that novel concept called science. It's something new, apparently, to the left, because a Harvard researcher has done the full detailed review. He actually examines professionally atmospheric anomalies. And this is all out there. This is available. Anybody can go look at it. This is on the Event Horizon blog titled Tracking UFOs Over North America with Harvard's Amir Siraj. Amir Siraj is a researcher who actually goes through and does detailed scientific analysis. And if you go watch this, again, this guy's not part of any political party. He's just a scientist. He's figured out that at least two of the new anomalies, not the balloon that was shot down, the other ones that were shot down after, he figured out the Yukon and Lake Huron objects actually run the data, look at the wind directions and dates and where things would be. He's assessed that these things came out of the PRC, the People's Republic of China, in the area northeast where these things, where we believe that there are the balloon programs for the Chinese. So my point being is, if a researcher from Harvard can sit down and just simply look at where, and he took all open source data, look at where DOD reports they shot these things down, look at the prevailing winds, use NOAA tools and data, it basically tells you that these things came from China. So I'm sticking with my assessment I gave originally when I was, when we first started talking about these things. So, Rick, in my judgment, if you just actually go with the scientists at Harvard, they came from China. And so that goes back to the comments of Kirby and Biden to be essentially, to be polite, falsehoods. So I do believe at this point DOD knows exactly what's going on. That's why they dropped off and stopped the search for debris yesterday. And that's why they're trying to downplay this, because they do know. If they didn't know, they'd be all hyper still trying to figure it out. So it's one of those things that this administration is more worried about trying to placate the Chinese than stand up and be clear that we will not tolerate aggression, because that's what we're, I think this all was from China, just a way of provocation to get under the skin of America. So
Tony, there's always this fine line of pushing foreign entities that are out to rule the world, like Vladimir Putin, and everybody was kind of handling him with kid gloves because, you know, if we do this, he's going to go nuclear.
And that worked out so well, didn't it? Yeah, that worked out well, right, Rick?
First anniversary is coming up Friday of the war.
Yep.
But when it comes to China, you know, how would you handle Xi Jinping? In other words, you know, you see what the Biden administration's doing. It's competition, not conflict. How would you handle this guy?
Well, there's three things that I think are on the table that have to be addressed. First, fentanyl. We have what I consider a weapon of mass destruction coming through the southwest border 24/7. And that's another area that Biden has refused to act on. I don't believe this is detached. I think it's related. Every community, Rick, in the United States is affected by fentanyl. Every community. And yet somehow we're not accepting that as a fact, and at the fact that the origin of most of these things are now coming from China. So, and that's part of their strategy, is to weaken the fabric of the United States culture and political system. Secondly, COVID. I don't know. Last time I checked, murdering people is against the law. And when we recognize now, most indicators are showing that this thing came from China. And I do believe that's something that China, you know, once they figured out they had it within their borders and affecting their people, I think they let it go to the rest of the world. And that's in the rest is history. So I think that's something that has to be put on the table. And then third is their obvious expansion of the military, which indicates to me that they are planning some level of military operations in and around Taiwan. Taiwan is a resource we all depend upon. I think something like 92% of all chips that go in cars comes from there. So I put these on the table and basically remind them that these are the things that we have to fix. You cannot continue to do it, and state them up front. These are the things we, United States, are not willing to accept, and then start listing out what our responses are going to be, and then holding them accountable to those responses. And I don't want to prompt World War III. I'm not a neocon. I'm just saying you need to clarify. We need to clarify our own objectives of what we stand for and what we're willing to do or not do, or what we want resolved, and then go about doing that, setting up our policies and strategy around what we want, not what they want. That's not being done. The Biden administration is completely feckless in trying to establish our policies relating to how to push back on this. Now, how we would push back, that's a whole other story, and I'd have to go through and probably explain. It'd be a series of covert and overt acts to remind the Chinese of their own vulnerabilities relating to population, food, energy, and water. So, you know, the Chinese are far more fragile as a nation than I think they want to admit, and far more fragile than we're willing to kind of take on and remind them of at this point.
And let's turn to the Ukraine war. Apparently not going so well for Vladimir Putin. Headline, The Insider, a top Russian military official is dead after falling out of a 16th floor window, the latest in a string of untimely deaths. And it was 54-year-old Marina Yankina, and she's the head of financial support of the Russian Department of the Defense Ministry. So yet another one. Wow.
So, look, I keep saying this, and I don't want the audience to get upset. It's like Putin's a thug. I'm just saying it's like he's not a good guy. And a lot of the time, if you're not performing at the level of his expectation, your retirement could be walking out of your hot tub in this big, luxurious, you know, building, and you're falling to your death. I mean, just saying. I wasn't there. I don't know if that happened or not. But I'm just saying that, you know, it's very clear that Putin – can retire people at will if they don't seem to be measuring up. And I do believe there's something to all of these accidental deaths within the Russian national security establishment.
Well, it seems to be his favorite M.O.
I was going to say, that just reminds everybody he is a thug, yes. And I hear voices out there saying, well, you know, Russia has righteous issues. They may, but Putin's still a thug.
February 24th is the one-year anniversary of the Ukraine war.
Right.
And Zelensky this morning at the Munich Security Conference, he's digging in and asking for speedy help. He's talking a lot about speed.
Yeah.
He needs a lot of things, and he needs them fast. So your assessment of the war at this point?
So that's what, as we're walking up to. So the Russians have fixed their side. They now have thousands of men. Their factories are producing munitions over time. And one of the features of that, of the Russians, Rick, is the fact they never gave up their Soviet-style control of certain areas of the economy. They kept their factories, their state-controlled factories, left over from the Soviet Union. So they're producing munitions at a pace the West cannot. They are just doing that. Zelensky's correct. Unless he is able to obtain significant, I mean significant resources, as in hundreds, if not a thousand tanks, manpower to replace the over 100,000 man casualties they've sustained. Unless they can do that, I think this is going to be over by summer. I'm just saying. And again, I am neutral in this. I don't believe we should be taking either side. But if you just look at the numbers and how the Russians have kind of fixed their act, got their stuff back together, put stuff on the battlefield, Zelensky is facing, essentially, I think, three large reinforced Soviet-style tank armies that will soon be kind of moving west towards the Dnieper River. And unless huge, I mean, you, Rick, these 18 Leopard 2s promised by the Germans, four of which are coming from Portugal, the Challengers coming from England, and the handful of Abrams we're sending, those will not do anything at this point, especially if you don't have some level of trained and available troops to go with it. So that's the harsh reality. 1 year in, I think there's 6 months left unless something dramatic changes on the amount and scope of aid coming to Zelensky within the next, I'd say, 2 months.
So do we and the European allies, do we have the hardware available to provide to them?
Of course. This is a political choice. No, it's, look, Rick, we've got 3,000 Abrams. Just say it. 2,000 of those are the top of the line. I know places in Virginia that we have these things sitting lined up over hundreds in lines. It's not the resource. It's the political decision to not send them. There's a fear, and many leaders are not talking about it, that, gee, we send our best technology over there, and the Russians may get it because they may capture it. So there's a reluctance there. Secondly, there's a real understanding of what I just said. They won't talk about it. But I'm telling you right now, my assessment based on my team's reviewing this and updating me every day is this is not sustainable for the Ukrainians, and this is a matter of time. It's a numbers game. It's a war of attrition that the Russians are able to play. So to actually be effective, you would have to introduce NATO as a full partner and going against the Russians, and I don't think anybody has a stomach for that.
I want to turn to another topic that we're hearing a lot about these days, and that is fentanyl and the damage that it is doing around the country. And it is mind-boggling to me how this administration just seems to ignore the problem. I don't know. Maybe I'm missing something here, but I don't hear of a plan to attack the fentanyl problem.
There is no plan. I worked the counter-drug issue back in the 90s as part of JADF East. In Key West, now it's called JADF South, Joint Interagency Task Force East or South. And there was a whole interagency group working to stop cocaine coming out of Latin America. Actually worked very effectively. We used something called the linear approach, actually broke the Medellin and Cali cartel. We have no such effort now, Rick, to actually examine this from a perspective of how do we use a whole-of-government approach to stop it. And again, we don't have this because it's a political choice. It's a policy choice not to have the resources of the massive resources of the United States focused on this. So all I can say is the Biden administration has decided that they are just fine with the Chinese producing the chemicals, the precursors, as well as actual fentanyl, sending it through to Mexico and allowing it to come through our border. Again, it's a political choice. You can make of it what you wish, but it is something the Biden administration is permitting to do to happen.
And we're out of time, unfortunately, Tony, but next week I want to get into the cartels and the hardware. They've got drones flying around the United States.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I've seen reporting that just the cartel, this stuff is unbelievable, what is actually going on in our country, and we're allowing it to go on. This is organized crime. It's unbelievable.
Right. No, cartels are the first to adapt new technology. We knew this from the 90s. And again, we're not doing anything to stop it, just saying.
Thought to Action podcast, what you got this weekend?
So we're doing another round with the girls, with the rock and roll folks. We're going and talking about cultural issues, cultural war. We'll be taping with some other folks this week. I actually don't know what's going on because we have a couple of different rescheduling we have to do regarding guests, but it'll be fun to have you guys have folks show up and look at the culture wars and our discussion of woke issues.
You'll find it at londoncenter.org. Tony, thank you so much.
Thanks, Rick.
Well, speaking of rescheduling, if you're just joining us, I know people will tune in different times of the show. KT McFarland, normally with us, has already been on this morning because we talked to her live from the Glasgow airport prior to boarding a flight. So KT will not be with us in the normal slot, but you can catch KT on the podcast later on today. So she is on the show just early today. Cheryl Atkinson is coming up next, so stay with us. Al BD is in the WML Traffic Center this morning.
In Montgomery County, on the Claire Barton Parkway, east of the Beltway, there is a crash. Also in Montgomery County on George Avenue, both lanes are shut down, northbound and southbound, between Frederick Lane and Spring Street. In Fairfax on 66 westbound, that's jammed up between 123 and Route 50. And in D.C. on Sutherland Parkway, there is an accident. Both directions are affected at First Sterling Avenue. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Temperatures much colder to start your weekend. We are in the low 30s this morning, but we'll climb up to around 48 to 49 for that afternoon high, which is normal this time of year. Plenty of sunshine and light west winds at about 10 miles per hour. Tonight, down to the upper 30s, and tomorrow afternoon, middle to upper 50s. A little bit breezy as south winds return around 15 miles per hour. I'm 7 News meteorologist Jordan Evans in the First Alert Weather Center.
27 degrees in the nation's capital, 7:51 on the Saturday morning update. It is the Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Fowler. Thank you for being with us this holiday weekend, and we want to thank Cheryl Atkinson for joining us on a holiday weekend. Good morning.
Good morning.
Of course, Cheryl is the host of Full Measure. That's tomorrow morning, 10 o'clock on ABC 7, and she is also a New York Times best-selling author. Cheryl, you know, we've seen the evolution of what were supposed to be unbiased sources of news, like the Associated Press and things, UPI. And now it seems like more and more the sort of old school reliable news sources are more like editorial opinion and even agenda oriented. And Reuters has been historically a reliable source of news, kind of an international version of the AP or UPI. And you speak to an insider there tomorrow.
Yeah, you know, all these news organizations have battles going on with them and really have for the past 10 years or so, with some people inside the news organization raising these issues and often being smacked down. And I'm speaking to a guy named Zach Kriegman, who was a pretty high-level manager at Reuters Thompson, a data analyst, who said that he was watching what their news division was reporting about Black Lives Matter, and he had done his own research and continued to do so and said they were reporting wrong, incorrect, false information about Black Lives Matter. And he had studies and research to show it. He thought he was pretty worked up over it because he said he thought that it was costing lives because it was stoking the defund the police movement and hurting the very people that Black Lives Matter was supposed to be helping. But I really think the story is not so much about his individual gripes, but how it was handled when he brought it up. Because he presented some research, actually sort of made a presentation inside the organization, and what happened to him was just, you know, almost unthinkable in terms of you're supposed to be able to have a free exchange and have a discussion in a place like that, and they called him names, they attacked him racially, they accused him of being a Ku Klux Klan sympathizer. So we're going to hear from him tomorrow, and of course Reuters denies that it's doing anything inappropriate. They say the coverage is always fair and unbiased.
And did he seem like he was just forced out? Is that the way he felt?
Yep, he was. So he was fired. He shows us on Full Measure. He'll show the email that they sent to him as to the reason behind it. But he always had good reviews, had pretty recently been promoted until this came up. And they ended up telling him he was not the kind of leader that they wanted at Thomson Reuters. Now, he's challenging it, though, Rick. He's planning to file a lawsuit.
Another story you have tomorrow. Alzheimer's drug treatments have created controversies over the past several years. One came out that was just so expensive, Medicare wouldn't pay for it. And there is a new one coming down the pike. And what do you have on that tomorrow?
Well, yeah, and it wasn't just how expensive it was. You're right. Medicare wouldn't pay for it, but it was also questionable in terms of safety and efficacy. So there were all kinds of controversy about that. We covered that on Full Measure. It was approved by the FDA without a single yes vote from the FDA Advisory Committee. In fact, a couple of members quit over it, that the FDA went ahead and approved the drug. Well, while investigations about that process are still going on, what does the FDA do? It fast-tracks and approves another new Alzheimer's drug. It's very similar. It's made by the same company. And you can imagine the same medical groups and watchdog groups are questioning this approval as well. So we're going to talk about that. I mean, everybody would love to see a cure for Alzheimer's or even a good treatment. But those on the inside say not this way, not with a drug that has little to any good effect and a safety profile that could be causing real risk to the people who take it.
One more you have tomorrow. We've all seen the dust-up with China over the spy balloon, and our next standoff with China may not be over a balloon or even over Taiwan, but it may be out of this world.
Yeah, you know, Lisa Fletcher is looking into this for us. We've announced we're going back to the moon, meaning the United States, and China's got plans, too, and they tend to follow through on their space plans. They have specific dates that they say they're going to be doing certain things, but what Lisa found is, whereas we talk a lot about the scientific and technological advances that we hope to make by going to the moon and exploring in space, China's very practical-minded. They're talking about mining for rare earth minerals. They're talking about exploiting things, you know, economically. And we don't seem to have a plan to do that sort of thing. She's also going to ask, I thought this was pretty interesting, and asked her to find out, what happened with us when we planted the flag on the moon when we were first to land there? Does that mean we owned it? Can China lay claim? Can anybody own parts of the moon? This is going to answer all those questions for us tomorrow, too.
All tomorrow morning, ABC 7, 10 o'clock, it's Full Measure. Cheryl, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's it for the Saturday Morning Update. Have a great holiday weekend. And as I mentioned before, KT McFarland joined us earlier this morning, so you can catch her on the podcast. Thank you so much, and enjoy your holiday. Garden Sense this afternoon at 1.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9. WMAL-FM.